Hi there, my name is Jamie Mackay and I lead the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. The following podcast is part of a series of interviews with graduates of the part-time M.Ed in Learning and Teaching in the Arts programme. This programme is delivered on a blended learning model but can also be studied fully remotely. All participants on the programme have a role as an arts educator and the programme is designed to help them develop their teaching practice and their arts practice, and it culminates in a self-designed final project. For more information on the programme, check the website on rcs.ac.uk/med. In this podcast, I'm very pleased to be interviewing Tanya Chaika, an author, teaching artist and founder of Le Petit Monde Theatre. So welcome and thank you so much for joining me this morning. Could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Hello. I'm French, as you will guess by my accent, hopefully. I arrived in Scotland in the 90s, 91. I qualified as an early years practitioner, so that's working in nurseries. I worked in nurseries for about 8 years, and then I realized that I really wanted to share my French language with the children. So I left and I set up a puppet theatre company called Le Petit Monde. I performed, the main work that I did was writing and performing shows that are bilingual, French, English, but accessible to every child that does not speak French. So that's really important to my work. So puppet shows, workshops, all kinds of activities with accessible French. And then what happens next? I wrote a picture book based on my puppets called Lapin is Hungry. So I'm an author as well. And then I did a master's and I'm now a teaching artist. I'm an early years practitioner in a primary school, and I support teachers in their role to teach through play. And beside this, I am, as a teaching artist, I'm currently setting up a professional learning program for teachers to teach French, but hopefully other languages through creative puppetry and bilingual stories. So it's going to be my books and creative puppetry. So that's what I'm working on at the moment.
Great. Thank you, Tanya. So when you're working with learners, what's your goal?
So if I've got children as learners, if I work directly with children, my goal is that they enjoy the experience. Because I'm introducing or teaching French, I think that's really important to create a positive experience where they feel emotionally safe. And I've learned that through experience, but also through research. That's important. Same with adults. If I work with teachers as learners, I really try my best to create an atmosphere or context that's open and flexible and where they feel comfortable. For the learning to take place, to start and to become a rich thing for them. Yeah. Hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. So for these two different types of learners, what barriers can get in the way of achieving that goal?
I can't really think of barriers for children because they're really open to new things. Young children I'm talking about, whether nursery or up to 5-6, they're curious, they want to engage. So if I offer something that's engaging and attractive, it usually there's no barriers, especially in the way I work, where I'm not going to try to to go too far. I'll come to their level and go a little bit further to challenge them. But yeah, so with children, I wouldn't think of barriers, but with adults, it could be that the adult or the teacher has this mindset that they're not very good at languages, for example, and that's often a barrier that they've created themselves through maybe bad experience of learning a language, of not going into that direction of learning. So so yeah, that's about the only thing. So it's all about, yeah, creating something that's engaging for both adults and children, I think.
So what strategies do you use to help you achieve that goal and or to deal with those barriers?
So if I work with teachers who are not confident with the language, I'll try to go around that barrier in a way, or yeah, go over is a bit harder, but go around, find a way. So same, it's getting at their level, find the level they are at of confidence and take it from there. So I'm a big believer in scaffolding, the scaffolding approach. So tiptoe, I always tiptoe and build strong foundations for their learning. And I would think it would work, you know, if you're not too demanding, no pressure. Yeah, no pressure is a big one.
Thanks, Tanya. So how do you measure your success then as an arts educator?
I don't have any specific measuring tools, let's say, but I find that what I've done works or is successful when I see a child coming to me and saying bonjour, or saying that to their teachers, or so using French in their own context. That's super important to me, is trying to get away from a list of colors or a list of numbers. So putting the French in context, and I've heard parents or teachers telling me that, yeah, children use French at home with their dolls or using their puppets in schools in their own play, in their own stories. So I think that's success. And I've had teachers, if a teacher tells me that what they've done with me has changed the way they will teach French, yes, I think that's success as well, in a good way. So yeah, feedback from teachers, parents, drawings from the children, all this kind of comments, feedbacks, and visual pictures and things, photos. Yeah, that's what I use.
Great. Yeah, thank you. So what would you describe the ideal relationship between you and your learners, and it may be a different response for the young people to the adults, or maybe the same response, but the relationship you'd like to have with them, or you do have with them?
An open relationship. So the ideal relationship is where we trust each other. I think especially children, they need to trust the adult, and again, feel emotionally safe. So that's up to me to create that. With adults, it's all about, being honest and try to tailor to their needs. The resources I'm creating just now, that's hopefully based on what the teachers need. If they don't have much time, and I know they don't, for their teaching, for planning resources, I'm trying to give them what they what they need, so they don't spend tons of time doing this work. Yeah, I think that's it. We trust and tailored tailored resources.
Yeah,
in relationship.
Thank you. So what job title are you most comfortable with then?
I'm glad you asked, because I think it's the title I see myself as is teaching artist. Again, I've learned to accept myself as a teaching artist through the masters, even though I was doing very similar type of work before. I was not working with teachers. That's a new thing, but I was working with children a lot directly, introducing French. So through creative arts, through making things and show. So yeah, I think I'm a teaching artist.
Thank you very much. Okay, what three values are central to your practice then as an arts educator?
From the beginning, I really want my work to be as accessible as possible. And I think it's working. The book that's been used for the teachers in the program is, they all say it's accessible, and to even children who have special needs engage in their own way with the story. So I think it's accessibility is important to me. The second one would be, and it's quite linked, inclusivity, so an inclusive practice as well. What I've found is that children who have additional support needs tend to be left out a little bit of language learning for various reasons, and it's complex. But if we can provide teachers with resources and a method that includes every child, potentially, that would be good. So that's what I'm trying to do. And creativity is brilliant for this. We know that, especially puppetry. So the third one would be a more general one. It'd be play. We know that children learn best through play, young children, even older children, but that's another subject, and even adults. So I try to get this playfulness element in my work, so the learning is more natural, holistic, pleasant. Yeah, that's important.
Thanks, Tanya. That's great. Slightly shift a little bit here to a hypothetical scenario. If you could have a mentor from any time in history, real or fictional, to support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
Oh, can I have two?
I'll allow you to have two, yes.
Thank you. So I'm a big fan of the work of the late Ken Robinson. Huge fan. I read his books lots. I think he understood what creativity can bring to education, and how education would be a much, much better, happier place if we all included creativity, not on top of the curriculum, but inside the curriculum. So that would be my first mentor. My second one is a lady who is alive, and I discovered her work through the master's research. It's a book, I'll show you if you want this. She wrote this book. She's called Joanna Smith. She's a puppeteer, she's a teacher, a lecturer, and she calls herself a teaching artist as well. So And for the first time, I've not met her in person, but I've met her online in an event on puppetry. And she's fantastic. She's fun. She's engaging. She's lovely. So I'm hoping to meet her and share my work with her. And yeah, I think she'd be my mentor, definitely.
That's great. So if you could ask them one question, what would it be?
I think I would ask both of them something I've been thinking about. I've been asked to think about a blue sky idea for a puppet animation event. We were all asked this question: what's your blue sky idea for puppetry or the arts? And I've been thinking about having a teaching artist in every place of work or education, whether it's a bank or a hospital, prison, a school, have a teaching artist there that's available to people who work there and to interact with them. So I would ask Ken Robinson and Joanna, what do you think of this idea of having a teaching artist everywhere? That's my blue sky idea.
Okay, so how do you think they would answer then?
I think they would say yes. but I'm guessing, I don't know about Joanna, but I'm guessing Ken would say, how are you going to work towards this happening? Because that's the way, I think that's the way you wrote things. How are you going to make this happen, blue sky idea? What do you do about it? That's my thinking.
How do you think Joanna would answer then?
I think she would say yes, that'd be great. I don't know what else she would say, and I'm quite happy to ask her when I meet her. Maybe we might be meeting next year. She's just in the States. She's coming in Europe. She's coming to Wales.
Great.
Yeah, I'm hoping chance
to meet her in person. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice that we haven't covered?
No, but just one more point. I think within art education, I think it'd be important to spread the word, the term of teaching artist, what that entails, what the job is, just talk about the role of the teaching artist more. I think it's more spread in the States, the idea of the teaching artist, but not so much in the UK, from what I understand anyway. I think that would help towards my blue sky idea. That would be more in the limelight, more accepted, and accepted in the way that we know we can make a huge difference to education, to people's lives. So yeah, that's about showing this, isn't it? It's about how do we show it? How do we make the people who make decisions accept that? And if we had teaching artists in every part of society, these people would be paid permanently as well, so that there wouldn't be this funding culture so much. So I think that would help towards the status of teaching artists as well. That's my thoughts.
That's great, Tanya. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed your answers.
Thank you very much.
It's been great hearing your insight into arts education.
So thank you for having me.
For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.